universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Well, as we go to air, there is news of another school shooting, this one in Maryland. First, I thought, well, maybe it's Baltimore, because Baltimore has not only the highest gun control that we find anywhere in the country, but it also has the highest murder rate, setting a record murder rate in 2017. But it's not in Baltimore. We're waiting details of that. And we had another bomb last night, this one in a Federal Express building. The bomb was on its way to Austin, which is, again, it's another Austin bombing. This time they decided they would mail it, went by Federal Express. It was in the FedEx ground distribution facility in San Antonio. It was a medium-sized box on the conveyor belt. When the explosion occurred, a woman was treated for possible sound injury and was released. It happened shortly after midnight. There was metal shrapnel and nails were headed inside the bomb, and it was headed to Austin when it exploded on the conveyor belt. So I would suggest that what these high school students do is they start to have some rallies about bomb control. I want to see the signs that say, never again, no more bombing. Maybe we could get Theresa May and Nikki Haley to come here and solve the issue, because they had absolutely no problem identifying Vladimir Putin as the culprit in the Russian spy incident, even though the Metropolitan Police said it was going to take hundreds of police officers that they had investigating what had already happened, what was not an ongoing investigation. We got 500 police officers at the very least here. We have the FBI, the ATF, local police officers looking at this. But in London, they said it was going to take them months with this army of policemen to figure out what was going on. And Theresa May and Nikki Haley identified the situation at once. So I think we ought to bring those expert investigators here to explain this to us. And as we're looking at the news, this tells you, I think, the sick environment in which we're in. Trump is being blasted for being silent about these bombings here in Austin. People saying if the victims were white, he'd be apoplectic. So President Trump is not doing enough to stop the bombing campaign when this army of police officers and investigators have no idea even what the motive is of this sick individual. And even though the first two events involved black people, the third one that happened on the second day, the first day there was a bomb, one man was killed. The next time it happened 7 days later, there were two bombings that day, fairly close to each other in a different part of the city. You had a young black man and was killed, and his mother was critically injured. And then later that day, a 75-year-old Hispanic woman was seriously injured with a bomb. Oh, so it's not white people. Let's criticize President Trump, except maybe they didn't get the memo that yesterday the two people that were injured were both white in another neighborhood. And then this is something that is going through the mail. We don't know who it was headed to. Was it headed to somebody that was black? Does it matter? Why do they have to say race in everything? This is the perspective of racists. Everything about to them is about race. To me, that's the very definition of a racist. So they inject racism into this mad bombing campaign that is here. This is the insanity that we have. You know, I remember years ago, National Lampoon, when you used to actually be able to make jokes about things without being called a racist, without being censored, so forth. National Lampoon, coming out of Harvard, of all places, once had a spoof magazine cover. Said New York Times says, end of the world, it's coming. Women and minorities hit hardest. And that basically sums up the insanity that we have today. We have become the Onion with all of this political correctness. So we're going to be back in just right after this break. We're going to talk a little bit about the insanity of the student marches. And we're going to be joined by a teacher who was throttled for saying that asking her question to her students, trying to provoke them and thinking, would it be okay to have a student march to protest, let's say, abortion, which kills far more people? Over a million people a year are killed by Planned Parenthood and abortionists, not 17. We'll be right back.
Found it. from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Well, as I announced at the top of the hour, we have another school shooting and another bombing today. We also have joining us in the next segment a teacher who was suspended because she talked to her students after the protests and asked them, would you be allowed to do this if it was about abortion, for example? And, of course, the march protests were 17 minutes for 17 lives. If we were to do that for the children that were killed with abortion, about a million children in the United States each year, that would be about 17,000 hours that the students would be out of class, or about 695 days, or about 2 years. So just leave class for 2 years to protest the number of children that are killed each year with abortion. But let's not think about that. We have teachers should not be armed, says an Alabama lawmaker, because most of them are women, and women, you know, they don't want to learn how to shoot and things like that and carry a gun. That was a Republican who actually said that. And then you got Charlize Theron, as I pointed out yesterday. You know, only Hollywood action females should be allowed to have guns. She was talking to some globalists, the Global Education and Skills Forum in Dubai. And she said, I just don't understand when people try to make the conversation, the argument that the fix is more guns. That is so outrageous to me. No, Charlize, the fix is not more guns. The fix is more freedom to defend yourself. That's not only our right. It is protected in the Constitution. It's a God-given right. I know you probably don't believe there's a God, but just think of it as a natural right that humans possess. And think of it as something that is expressly supported in the Constitution, and any infringement of that is prohibited. But let's take a look at what happened with the marches and the different responses that people had before we have our guest on. In Chicago, you had 60 Chicago students leave school and go and trash a Walmart because they were allowed to get out of school. In Tennessee, you had some students who tear down a flag, jump on a cop car that was near Nashville, Tennessee. In Ohio, a student was suspended because he stayed in class during the walkouts. He said he tried to remain non-political. That's not allowed in the schools. No, you have to not only make a choice and be political, but you got to make the right choices. We'll see here in just a moment. He wanted to remain non-political during the school walkout, so he didn't want to do anything. He was suspended for a day because he stayed in the classroom rather than joining the protests. So the district said this. They said they cannot be responsible for students if they're not unsupervised. They didn't have a problem with non-supervision of these students in Nashville or Chicago, did they? And it's kind of interesting that the principal, I have a video clip here of a parent confronting a principal saying, you have a duty to supervise my child when they're here in school, and you're just going to let these kids walk out of school? I want to play this clip for you. Here's the parent confronting the principal.
Well, they did not leave.
I'm saying if this was not a protest yesterday across the country, okay, about gun control or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you would have, and it's not that, and you would have let the kids just leave.
I'm sorry, leave if a group of 8, 10, 20 students.
So you just let them leave the class?
There's just me, a couple other folks. We would make sure they were safe. That's our job. I wouldn't push a student into a classroom.
No, that's not an acceptable answer. It's not, okay?
That is the answer that I'm providing.
Okay. I want to know who let them go. Was it you or was it somebody
who let them go? You have a duty to supervise them. All right, let's hold it right there. Then another example of different responses. This is one that was on Facebook. Kids at our school today walked out in honor of the 17 students killed in Florida. Students held signs, and one student walked out without saying a word. He peacefully put up a sign that said, guns don't kill people, people kill people. He was escorted off the property by the principal. He was threatened to be put into a police car. That was in New Prague High School, Minnesota. Then you have a New Jersey school district plans on punishing students who participate in walkouts. It's all over the place, depending on the school district. We had a teacher call us from New York a week before this was to happen. saying she didn't want to participate in this. She didn't want to be used as a prop in a gun control agenda. But she was told by her principal that she was going to have to participate. They were going to have a fire drill. Nobody was going to be allowed to stay in the building. So in some cases, they're going to flush everybody out with a fire drill. In other cases, they're going to demand that you participate. They'll suspend you if you stay in the classroom because you don't want to participate in this. Others, they allow the kids to just run wild. When a parent complains to the principal about it in one school district, the principal says, I have no responsibility for these kids. And he goes, are you kidding me? Well, no, they do whatever they want to. If they want to walk out of school, they walk out of school. He goes, you can't be serious. This is a 12-year-old we're talking about. And so then you have a New Jersey school district that said that they are going to punish students, give them a 2-day suspension. Students who attended the protest would be told that they would receive detention. Coming up in the next break, we're going to be talking to a California high school history teacher, Julianne Benzel, who wanted to get her kids to think about this. And she was punished for talking to her kids, trying to get them to think about what they're really doing. Reason put it this way. They said, today some students, teachers, and other Americans who share their views are walking out of classes across the country to call for limits on the right of free assembly. Oh, no, wait. That's not what they did. They walked out of class to call for further restrictions on protections against unreasonable search and seizure. Oh, no, they didn't do that either. They didn't walk out in response to the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment. Wait, I have it. They're protesting for greater regulation of self-defense rights. Yeah, that's it. So these people are demanding that their right to self-defense be taken away, which brings us back to Charlize Theron, who was saying, I think it's outrageous that the idea that we would have more guns. And I said, it's not about more guns. It's about more freedom to protect yourself and being and having your right to protect yourself recognized as it is in the supreme law of the land, in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights. And yet they have brainwashed these kids to demand that they not have any right of self-defense. And, of course, we see this throughout our society. As I tweeted out about the Uber crash where a pedestrian was killed, some guy came back to me and said, oh, well, they're getting better, and they're going to be much better than humans, and humans kill pedestrians all the time anyway, and these self-driving cars are going to be so much better than human wetware. Wetware. That's what he refers to humans at. That's the contempt that he has for dignity and for freedom. And I just replied to him, I think it was a quote from Jefferson. I said, I prefer dangerous liberty to peaceful slavery any day of the week. And you don't even understand, perhaps, or maybe you do embrace it because you have the mentality of a slave, but you don't even understand what these robo-taxis are there for. They're there to control and to tax your every movement, and you haven't got a clue. It's not about whether or not these things can drive better than a human. It's about who's going to be in control. And that's the question that we have to look at with every one of these technological questions. And when we look at the Second Amendment, it is simply a technological question. The question is not whether we have an AR-15, which Cory Booker has now elevated to the level of weapon of mass destruction like a bomb. No, it isn't about whether it's an AR-15 versus a musket. It isn't about the technology. It's about who controls the technology. If you understand history, if you understand the history of tyranny, you understand that in Britain, when the preferred weapons were bows and arrows, the yeomanry were allowed to have longbows. As a matter of fact, they demanded that they have longbows. They practiced all the time. You could look at their arms, the skeletons of the people who were yeomen at the time. And they had thicker bones on their left arm that they held out to shoot arrows. What they were not allowed to have was crossbows. See, crossbows could very easily penetrate the armor. And that was not allowed to the yeomanry because it was about controlling people. And we have to look at technology that way. Stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk to the California high school history teacher who actually tried to teach history and got suspended. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We have on the line with us a California high school history teacher Julianne Benzel, who talked to her students, I think it was before and after the walkout, about what was really going on and asked them some thought-provoking questions about the walkout that we had last week. And for that, she was put on paid administrative leave. She has now been restored to her normal status, but I wanted to talk to her about the kinds of discussions that she had and what she's taken away from this this situation here. So joining us now is Julianne Benzel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for trying to get your students to think about what they're doing rather than just kind of following the herd mentality. Tell us a little bit about the discussion, when it occurred, and the types of questions that you threw out there for the discussion.
Well, the march, as you well know, was taking place on Wednesday the 14th. And so the Thursday and Friday previous, I wanted to make sure that my students were informed. I kind of had a premonition that they were not aware of it. So I just asked them, you know, and the majority of them were not. And I just gave a brief overview of what was taking place. And I said, go do some research on your own. And more importantly, I said, draw your own conclusions. Come up with some rationale as to why you would make a choice to walk out or not. And I also challenged them to go have a dialogue with your parents. I'm a parent, so I would definitely want to know if my student was planning on getting up and walking out of class and why. So I didn't.
And let me ask you this. Let me ask you about the march, because I was just in the lead up to this talking about all the different reactions that we'd seen all across the country. Some school jurisdictions, they basically threatened the kids if they didn't participate. Some they threatened them if they did participate. We had some parents who were very upset that the children were allowed to leave without any supervision. What was the situation in your high school?
So I would say that ours was facilitated and supported. It was supposed to rain. In fact, it did rain that day. And so the administration was going to move they were originally going to meet in the quad, and they were going to move it to the gym. And our physical education teachers usually use that as our classroom if it's raining. So there was a little bit of pushback on that. They brought out tents because it was raining. They brought out the PA system.
Wow.
And so this was something that was, I see that as support, right? If a student really genuinely feels passionate about a subject or something that they really want to bring attention to, I'm just drawing back to Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from Birmingham Jail. If you are willing to sacrifice and take whatever punishment is needed for making a stand, then that tells me that you're really, really genuinely concerned about the issue. But when students were allowed to get up and walk out without penalty, then, you know, these are high school students. So the majority of them, unfortunately, did not really even understand what was happening. The average high school student would love to get out of class for 17 minutes for any reason. So
field trip.
My main impetus was information. As you just preluded this discussion that, you know, be informed and know why. So that's basically what took place.
So you have to have some understanding of what's going on. You have to have really some skin in the game that if they're not going to encourage you or push you in one direction or the other, to push you to support this or to push you to not support this, depending on the school jurisdiction, have the courage of your convictions and know what you're thinking. And that's what you were encouraging them to do. But the administration was pushing people so heavily in this, they thought that maybe you were, what, pushing the kids away from doing this by getting them to think about what they're doing rather than just being useful idiots, like Lennon referred to people, say, you know, just join the crowd. It's a herd mentality. Just follow the crowd.
Well, I like your herd mentality because I think that's exactly it. When we were, as teachers, informed of this, as far as how the school was going to, you know, deal with it. This was not a discussion. This was not, what do you guys think? How can we work together? This is happening. So exactly what you just said, I feel like we, even as teachers, were told to kind of be quiet, fall in line, and this is what's happening. Don't you dare punish your students if they walk out. And I just thought this is appropriate to have a discussion in class. I teach advanced placement U.S. history. And these kids understood, unfortunately, I think, more than the administration.
That's good. So tell us a little bit about the discussion there. Did they think about this? Did they think about, you mentioned abortion, which would be, maybe a pro-life thing, which would be aligned with conservative interests, and other than gun control, which you would see as a liberal interest. So if the shoe was on the other foot, would the administration allow something like that? What did the kids say about that?
Well, again, I had no backlash from my students. So they clearly understood that there was a double standard here. And I just, again, asked if it's appropriate, if our administration, or I did say administrations throughout the country, if we're going to allow this protest, then we certainly have to allow other protests. And so that was the Thursday and Friday. And I was on campus on Monday and Tuesday. So March 12th and 13th, and the protest was taking place Wednesday, March 14th, and I received a call at 8:30 a.m. I teach at 9 a.m. every day, so basically saying, you're on administrative leave, do not come to campus today.
Wow. So they threw you out for that particular day. Any other explanation for that, other than just saying you can't come? They thought that you were going to be against their agenda, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I wasn't given any reason whatsoever at that time. I still have not had a sufficient answer given to me. They told the media before me as to why I was put on leave.
Really?
But as this has all unraveled, I do think that they thought I was going to be disruptive and maybe continue to challenge the protest. But you know what happens when you presume? Like, I literally stayed up till 11:15 p.m. the night before, completely altering my lesson so that it would be accommodating to students, because I knew there were going to be students to walk out, and that I wanted to be as least disruptive as possible. So their presumption was absolutely 100% inaccurate on how I was going to act.
Yeah, so they were afraid that you were going to protest the protesters. But isn't that your right to protest the protesters if you don't agree with what they're having to say, what they're saying, right? Isn't that the essence of the First Amendment?
Correct. And that's the bigger issue here is, and I think you pointed out earlier, what is really bothersome to me as this whole event unfolded in the last few days after, is how there was no uniform pattern of how this was dealt with. Some schools, as you pointed out, basically almost forced their students to participate.
That's right.
Some students,
some forced them not. But what you cannot do is you cannot dissent from the protest or the, I mean, it is one way or the other. It is a top down enforcement, whether you participate or whether you not participate. I mean, that's the thing that really concerns me is that we're losing the First Amendment, not just the Second Amendment. I see this as an attack on the Second Amendment, but it certainly was an attack on the First Amendment.
Right. And that's where I am so appreciative of outlets like yourself for having this national discussion and moving it forward. This conversation needs to continue because there are going to be more protests like this if we allow students to do this. And if that's where we're headed as a nation, if we want our public schools to be the hotbeds of political activism, then that is completely fine. I would be actually very much in favor of that, as long as all students with any issue were allowed to do so. We cannot allow one group
to have
preferential treatment.
It's the selective use of free speech. That is not free speech. It is censorship. Thank you so much for your courage, and thank you so much for joining us, Julianne Benzel. Welcome back. We're talking to the California High School history teacher, Julianne Benzel, who was having discussions with her children, before the student walkout, asking them if they understood what was happening here and giving them some thought experiments. What if it were a different issue? Would you still be allowed, or should you still be allowed to walk out? What is it that you're actually protesting? And because of that, the administration there that was very supportive, and as we talked about it, it's all over the map. Some administrations, some schools were not supportive of this and would punish students if they participated. Others would punish students if they did not participate. And this particular school punished the teacher that they thought was getting these children to think. And they told her the day of the march at 8 o'clock, they thought she was going to be protesting the protest. So they said, don't come to school. You're on paid administrative leave. Julianne, let me ask you, how long did that leave last? The march was what? It's on Wednesday, right? And did they have you on paid administrative leave from Wednesday to Friday?
Well, it was extremely vague when, how long I was going to be on leave. Again, to reiterate that they didn't tell me why and they didn't tell me for how long. And So we were going to have a meeting the next day, and I invoked the best legal counsel that I possibly could because I wasn't sure what on earth was happening. And so my legal counsel met with them the next day, and his first question was, is this a disciplinary issue? And they said no. And I genuinely believe that because of all of the backlash, not this community has rallied behind me like no other, not just That's my good. Current students and parents, but previous students from like 5, 10, 15 years ago. I've taught for 20 years in this exact same school. So I have an unscathed record. And I genuinely believe that if it were not for media outlets as yourself and the backlash of the community, but the country of how dare you put a teacher on leave for asking her students to think, which is basically what happened. And so because of that backlash, so I can't really answer your original question because I genuinely don't know how long they were going to put me on leave and what the end result was going to be. But because of all of this outrage that they wanted me reinstated on Friday, they said, you're no longer on a paid administrative leave. This issue we want cleaned up was their terminology, and we want you back in the classroom tomorrow. And so I said, you have turned my world upside down, and I am not even, I wasn't even prepared to honestly have much of a discussion with them because I needed to figure out what was happening. Sixth Amendment, I mean, we were talking about the Second Amendment, we're talking about the First Amendment. Sixth Amendment is due process of the law, and there was no due process here in my case. And so I took a sick day, you know, took the day off.
Well, they don't even tell you what you're charged with, let alone allow you to answer the charges, right?
Exactly.
It's just, you're gone.
Yeah. So I miss my students dearly. They're definitely my number one priority. So I went back to work yesterday, which was Monday.
Well, that's good. And you sound like an excellent teacher. It's unusual for teachers to, certainly in this environment, and this is my concern with all of this, is do they understand? I'm sure that was your concern as well. It's fine if you understand what you're doing. But they're students because they have a lot to learn. They haven't got a lot of experience. And, you know, history is learning from the experience of other people, isn't it? And so you're teaching them about the experience of other people. And, you know, and so that all brings into question their judgment and whether or not they are doing things because they're being pressured. Peer pressure with high school students is so severe. We've all been there. We understand what that's like. And so that is the thing, and the pressure from authority. I've talked many times about the Milford experiments or the Ash experiments, where you basically go in and pressure people with authority or pressure them with the crowd. Will you go along with the crowd even if you know that it's not right? That's a very troubling thing. So, I mean, and what's your sense of this with the students there? Do they really understand what's going on here outside of your class? You can speak about your class. Your class is an advanced placement class, right? But, I mean, just in general about the students that you see at the high school?
Well, to be honest with you, what I found a little bit almost, I don't know if I want to use the word frightening, but you're talking about students falling in line, but I feel like we, as teachers, we were asked to fall in line and that there was kind of some peer pressure on the part of the teachers to just, again, you know, this is what's happening. Don't punish your students. You know, accommodate them, rework your lesson plans. So absolutely, if we as professional educators are kind of feeling that pressure, then can you imagine when a 16 or 17 year old, they have real peer pressure, but the pressure is definitely all around. And yeah, I was simply trying to ask them if a very logical, sensical question, if you are willing to support this protest, would you be willing to support a protest? And I obviously said facetiously the next day. So the next day we're going to have a protest at the exact same time, 10 a.m. Students are going to walk out for 17 minutes and they're going to protest abortion. And apparently just me bringing up abortion, I suppose, is what got. And I do want to make clear that this was two students and one parent's complaint that got me put on leave. That was the evidence that was provided for me, is that two students were uncomfortable with the conversation and one parent. And so there's a multiple layers here, but I feel like, wow, the empowerment that those students must feel right now, that they can go complain to the principal and get a teacher put on leave, you know, two students.
Yeah.
It's again, I don't want to be fixated on the word frightening, but it is a little scary that in our kind of climate of, oh, I don't like something and I don't like to be challenged and this is uncomfortable for me, so I'm just going to go complain and that teacher just got put on leave from what I did.
Well, imagine how we feel here in the media when we complain mm-hmm. about the agenda that is being sold to us and using high school students as a front for this. And then yes. if you question this agenda, it's like, oh, they're grieving. You can't say anything about them because then it's bullying or harassment. To which I right. say, if these children, I'm sorry about the experience that they had, but if they have overcome it to the point that they want to go on national television and engage in national debate and dictate policy to us, then they are fair mm-hmm. game for discussion. If they are that mature, if they are over their grief, then they're mature. But they use that as a protection, as a beard.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I use the word guys because this whole thing was a guise for, as you said, it was a protest. And the mm-hmm. way that it was presented to students and parents across the country was, we are remembering the 17 victims, which everybody in their right mind would want to do. In fact, some of my other students floated some beautiful ideas to the administration on how we could, the entire school could rally around and remember these 17 students, go in the quad area at lunchtime. It could have been a unifying event. And instead it turned into this, you know, very divisive political climate and protest. And I just want to maybe put a little challenge out there too. April 20th is the 20-year anniversary of Columbine. So this conversation is obviously going to continue. And I want to challenge people across this country that if you are genuinely interested in students, as I am, and you are genuinely interested in remembering those who have been hurt and wounded and lost at school, then let's unite as a country and remember them on the anniversary of Columbine instead of making this about divisive politics. Because there's
That's
a
right.
place for that. But I am a proponent of civic engagement and activism like no other. But if this is going to occur on a high school campus, then we have got to allow all voices to be heard.
Yes. And when we look at this, again, you are a teacher of history. When we hear the things like never again, that was what everybody said after the First World War. We never wanted mm-hmm. to see anything like that again. And yet within a couple of decades, we were at it again.
Yeah.
It's human nature. And so what mm-hmm. we have to do is say, what can we do to try to minimize this or to try mm-hmm. to put deterrence in place, it seems to me, because as we look at all of these different things that plague our society, whether it is gun violence or whether it is drug abuse or whatever, it isn't enough mm-hmm. to say that we're going to be gun-free or drug-free. We have mm-hmm. to understand that there has to be a legitimate discussion of how we can pursue policies that are going to minimize, we'll never eliminate the bad because we're humans. How do we
right.
minimize that, and can we have a fair and open discussion? Thank you so much for your courage. Thank you so much for teaching your children to think. That is a rare quality in schools these days. And I'm so sorry that you got punished, but I think you've been vindicated. And that's Julianne Benzel. Thank you so much for your work there, Julianne.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Now is John Kiriakou. He has been at the center of the debate over the nomination of Gina Haspel to be the director of the CIA. There was a story that came out when she was appointed deputy director, and we're going to talk about that story and the developments on that story that happened over the weekend. John wrote a op-ed piece for the Washington Post. I went to prison for disclosing the CIA's torture. Gina Haspel helped to cover it up. And it is with great pleasure that I welcome back John Kiriakou. You can find him, johnkiriakou.com. You spell his last name, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U. You can also find him on Twitter at John Kiriakou, a man that I have a great deal of respect for. There's not many people who will stand up for their principles who will stand up for the rule of law, of moral integrity, of the Constitution, of the Bill of Rights, are willing to go to prison. And as John said, he would do it all over again. I believe he would. He's that kind of guy. So joining us now is John Kiriakou. John, I want to ask you, first of all, because the big pushback, as I talked about this and my outrage over the nomination of Gina Haspel, I think it is absolutely outrageous that people like this are promoted. It was an outrage that she was put in as deputy director. Most of us didn't really notice that connection when it happened. ProPublica put out a piece at the time, and nobody really pushed back on their drawing a connection between her being the chief of base and the things that they said the chief of base said. Now, what happened over the weekend is that the CIA or some people at the CIA called ProPublica and said, no, she didn't go there to Thailand until 2002. So some of those statements that were attributed direct by you to her did not happen. And so now everybody is pushing back. Not everybody, but I'm getting a lot of comments on both videos as well as Twitter. People saying, this didn't happen. Fake news. She's not a torturer. Your response?
Oh, of course she's a torturer. The problem with the ProPublica piece is that, I made the same mistake. I quoted the Washington Post a year ago saying that she was out at the secret site for the torture of Abu Zubaydah. That turned out to not be true. But she was there 3 weeks later for the torture of Abdurrahim al-Nashidi. So, of course, she's a torturer. Now, David, in your intro, you talked about the rule of law and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and I could not have said it any better. The point here is that this was a violation of the law, destroying the tapes of the torture, which is what Gina Haspel ordered the new chief of base to do, was a violation of the law. And that's something that we ought not to forget. And let me say one other thing, too, before we move on. I think it's absolutely wonderful that the president wants to name a woman as the CIA director. The CIA has been run by white men for the last 71 years. That's terrific. But there have to be 50 women across government who are qualified for this job. Gina Haspel should not be in the director's chair.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted that out. I said, women, do you really want to be represented by this woman? Is this really the way that you want to move ahead and break the glass ceiling with somebody who is willing to break people's knuckles and a vice like some Torquemada of the Middle Ages? Is that really what we want to have as the poster child for a successful woman?
That's not who we ought to be as a country. You know, the president puts so much stock in the things that the generals around him say. Well, General Mattis told him that torture just simply doesn't work in gathering intelligence. General Kelly said the same thing. I can point you to 3-4 dozen other generals that will tell you the same thing, as well as intelligence professionals.
Yeah.
So something we really need to move on from.
Yeah. Well, and of course, one of the people who's very opposed to her nomination has always spoken out against this is John McCain. And I was surprised to see Dianne Feinstein, after they had the investigation into this and they put together the Feinstein-McCain bill, and then she was investigated. She and her staffers were investigated by the CIA for their troubles. And she was outraged. It's like, how dare you investigate me? I'm in charge of the oversight committee of your department or whatever. And she obviously, they needed a teacher who was really in charge here. But then she had this statement to say about Gina Haspel. She says, well, we now have a law that's going to stop that. It's a new day. So are you serious? We have laws in the Bill of Rights that are ignored on a routine basis every day. It's just a piece of paper if we don't have the moral integrity to stand behind this.
That's right. If there's no price to pay, then people are going to continue to violate the law. We have to set an example here. And part of the problem, a major part of the problem, is people like Dianne Feinstein, who just want to keep moving on. You can't keep moving on. There has to be some kind of a price. Now, Dianne Feinstein has traditionally been weak. And let me add something else, too. In the John Brennan era at the CIA, when the CIA was hacking into the Senate's computers and then lying about it, who was the acting deputy director of the CIA for operations? It was Gina Haspel. And so why hasn't she answered those questions? Was she involved in hacking into the Senate's computers? I have no idea, but I think she ought to tell the American people whether she was.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. Yeah, the thing that bothers me about this is the narrative that I see putting out there, and they were very successful this weekend, coming out and saying, well, that one specific fact about timing and about that individual that ProPublica had in their article was not true. Therefore, all of this stuff about her being a torturer and all this, that's all fake news. And now right. she has been exonerated by all these charges. Yet she was complicit. We had John Brennan who was complicit. I mean, John Brennan didn't actually pull the trigger, presumably, on the drone assassination things. But that was his policy, and he covered for it, and he defended it and executed it, the policy and so forth. And so, you know, he's got blood on his hands, just like Sheena Haspel does.
Yes, and another thing that people forget about John Brennan is that during the second George W. Bush term, he was the executive director of the CIA, the number three ranking person inside the CIA. So he was in this torture program up to his neck, besides then going on to the Obama administration and being the holder of the so-called kill list, which also is extrajudicial.
So, I think he called it, in typical CIA fashion, he called it a disposition matrix. It's like, what? You know, that's like Pentagon speak. I mean, they always come up, well, it's a disposition matrix. So we're not going to kill them. We're going to liquidate them and so forth. Right?
You know, thank goodness, David, we have the likes of Rand Paul, who had the guts to stand up right off the bat as soon as this nomination was announced. We need more Rand Pauls on both sides of the aisle. Rand Paul said over the weekend he was going to filibuster the nominations of both Gina Haspel and Mike Pompeo. But he can't do this by himself. He tried to filibuster the John Brennan nomination 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and lasted 13 hours. There have to be others willing to take this burden on with him. That's the only way we're going to stop this thing.
And this is the only issue on which I agree with John McCain. But he has been on point with this. He is right about this. Yeah. And he talks about the fact that it's not effective because he's been the subject of it. We had in that ProPublica article that they don't want to talk about, there was information there from people who were at the Pentagon, and they said that once they realized that this intelligence product coming from Gina Haspel was tainted by torture and that that was used as part of the basis for the Iraq invasion, they were very upset about that because they said, look, we can't really rely on this because it came out of torture. But it's beyond the issue of whether or not it is effective. I am so sick and tired of the moral depravity of this country when people come to me on Twitter and say, it worked. She got the bad guys. We don't care how she acts if we get the bad guys. It isn't a question of that. You want to make America great again, you better first make America moral again. That's where we got our Bill of Rights. We had a moral foundation, and we have lost that anchor. We've lost that mooring in this country when we support this kind of stuff if we think it's effective.
Amen. And that is exactly what I said in this op-ed in the Washington Post. There are a lot of things that work. We can murder children in front of their parents, but we don't because it's morally reprehensible. There are a lot of things that work, but it's not an issue of working. The question is it right? Is it moral? Is it ethical? And is it legal? Again, we like to tell other countries that we are a shining beacon of human rights and the rule of law. And that's just simply not true in a case like this. So we have to live by our own words. We have to show every other country in the world that we mean it and that we're the world's leader for a reason. And the reason is because we have a constitution that we respect and we have rule of law.
When we begin to behave in a morally reprehensible way like the Nazis, I mean, if it becomes clear to everybody that there's absolutely no moral restrictions on what the U.S. is willing or doing, then we're going to be regarded in the same way that Hitler and the SS and the Auschwitz prison camp guards were regarded. We will lose everything. We will become the pariah of the world. We will become the new Nazis if we behave like the new Nazis. That was what Nuremberg was all about. We have forgotten that. We used to be the people who stopped that, who put that on trial. Now we're the people who are advocating for it and excusing it on the basis of efficacy. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we've been talking to John Kiriakou, the man who, as he pointed out in his Washington Post op-ed piece, the CIA was furious that he had aired their dirty laundry. They came after him with multiple felonies, five felonies, including three counts of espionage, which were absolute nonsense. They dropped that if he would agree to plead to a lesser charge. They sent him to jail. They did not do anything to punish any of the people who had been engaged in the torture. Instead, they sent John to jail. And now it is against the law to torture. Well, why would it be against the law if there's nothing wrong with it? Why? You know, what's the big concern about this? And, of course, John, my big concern is we're talking about what's going to happen next. And Rand Paul has come out saying that he's going to work. He said it's going to take more than just one guy to do it. Republicans have 51 people in the Senate. If he pulls out, now it's 50-50. John McCain probably won't even make the vote because of his health. So now they're going to have a Democrat crossover. But I saw all of this pushback over the weekend as a pushback against Rand Paul because he read the ProPublica article that attributed some quotes to Gina Haspel that probably were not hers because she wasn't chief of base at the time. But from what you knew there, because you had brought in Abu Zubaydah, from what you knew about that, I mean, was that a fair characterization of Gina Haspel, nevertheless?
Yeah, she came afterwards. It was a fair. Yes, it was a fair characterization. Look, Gina's a longtime professional intelligence officer. She joined the CIA in 1985. She has 33 years of experience. When I was there, even pre-9/11, she was highly respected. But the thing is that after 9/11, when she assumed a position of leadership, she changed. And she made a conscious decision to come down on the side of the torturers. She was a protege of Jose Rodriguez, the notorious director of the CIA's Counterterrorism Center and later deputy director for operations. She replaced Jose as the deputy director for operations. So, as I said, she had multiple opportunities to say no, to put her foot down, but her career was more important to her, and that's what she did. You know, I was sickened also, David, when one of her supporters came out the other day and said that she was just following orders. It was as though... Yeah. It was as though
Nuremberg.
Know, yeah, I mean, that's like the one thing that you don't want to say as a defense is the Nuremberg defense. It doesn't work.
Yeah. That's really sad. Here's the other thing that concerns me, John. Here's the other thing that concerns me, too. And that is, you know, when Megyn Kelly was here to interview Alex Jones, she interviewed some of us, and she said to me, hey, did you see my Vladimir Putin interview? I said, I'm not worried about Vladimir Putin. I'm worried about John Brennan. I'm worried about James Clapper and Michael Hayden. And those guys, I said, they're the ones who are rigging our system. They're the ones who have absolutely no law restraining anything that they do. They're not accountable to anybody. And that's what we're seeing now. And I'm amazed to see President Trump embracing one of this ilk.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in that. Yeah, let's talk about John Brennan for a moment. I think that John Brennan's one of the most dangerous people in America.
Yes.
You know, when we talk about the notion of a deep state, I have the image of John Brennan in my mind.
Because that's pictures John Brennan, in the dictionary.
Yeah, John Brennan is the deep state. Yeah. Now, what we're seeing on Twitter, for example, with John Brennan attacking the president, is that John Brennan, on the left, is being rehabilitated and is being put forward as some sort of a senior statesman, along with Jim Clapper. They're not senior statesmen. They're criminals. And we have to isolate them. We have to push them away because they are not with us. Mm-hmm. There was an interesting poll this morning on MSNBC, of all places, and they said that 74% of Americans agree that there's a deep state in this country and that it's a threat. And I was surprised that it was only 74%. I mean, all people have to do is read the papers and follow what's going on around the country to know that the likes of John Brennan mean the country harm. They mean the
Constitution.
You're right.
They only have a vague idea of what it is if they can't connect it to John Brennan, who is working for the very network that commissioned that poll. Thank you so much, John Kiriakou. You can find him at johnkiriakou.com and on Twitter at John Kiriakou. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the real news. Live from from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We just had our final segment with John Kiriakou, if you're a radio station and you didn't catch the top of the hour. And as he was saying, although an MSNBC poll says that 74% of the people realize that there is a deep state that is controlling our government, and he was surprised that it was that low. I was actually kind of surprised that it was that high, to be honest with you. I mean, there is a cognitive dissonance in America that people are not really able to connect the dots because they're being constantly gaslighted by the media, for one. And I find it interesting that even as MSNBC is conducting this poll, where 74% of the people say, yes, there is a deep state, as John Kiriakou pointed out, John Brennan, the guy who was deeply involved in torture, the guy who was involved in selling and executing the drone assassination program of President Obama, excuse me. Sorry about that. The guy who was executing Obama's drone assassination and targeted bombing, he called it a disposition matrix. No, it wasn't a kill list. It was a disposition matrix. So that makes it okay. And then saying, we have not had any collateral damage. Translation, no innocent people have died. He knew that was a lie. We all knew it was a lie. And he continued to say that. MSNBC hired the guy who John Kiriakou said, when I think of the deep state, the person that comes to mind is John Brennan. And he knows John Brennan from having been in the CIA, John Kiriakou, a CIA whistleblower who was punished by them, went to jail for torture. For exposing the torture, being a whistleblower. None of the people who actually did the torture went to jail. But we've now admitted that it was wrong because we've now had a law that says you're not going to do that. Nevertheless, we can't punish any of the people who did that, even though they knew it was wrong, even though we had already punished people who had done that to American troops during World War II. You know, what we called waterboarding, they did that to people during World War II, the Japanese soldiers did to American soldiers. We executed the people who did that. We don't even send to jail the people who do it as part of the CIA. No, we promote them when they are complicit in that, when they cover that up, when they come up with the euphemism of enhanced interrogation. I can't remember the guy's name. He was the guy who was a CIA lawyer. And he had an interesting story about how he got in the CIA. He said he was watching the trials that were done by the church committee hearing. And he said, I looked at that and I said, boy, these guys in the CIA need a good lawyer. You know, the rest of us in America were appalled at what was being revealed about the CIA, about their program of assassination and so forth, which really, folks, was put out there as a beard to cover up what they were even more interested in. And that was surveillance of the American people without a search warrant. The product of those church committee hearings and of the Pike committee hearings and the main thrust of those was to examine the CIA and the NSA and to ask them on what authority they were spying on the American people, tapping into their phones at the time. And so they created the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to limit that. Instead, that was used as a tool to spy on Mr. and Mrs. Verizon, as Rand Paul points out, to do general warrants. And I have a story here about general warrants coming out of none other than Raleigh, North Carolina, where I used to live. Very sad to see Raleigh, North Carolina going that route. I mean, there's no more Sheriff Andy Taylor in North Carolina. It's like they're now being run by Barney Fife, drunk with power, using surveillance tactics and militarized police. It's unbelievable to see what's happening. But people better understand what is truly involved in general warrants. We had a war, and a big reason for that war were the general warrants. The same reason that we have a Fourth Amendment was the abuse of general warrants, the abuse of secret courts. The people who created this country were very well aware of what happens when you have this type of process, when you don't have people accused in public, allowed to defend themselves, know what the charges are, to be allowed to confront the witnesses against them, to bring witnesses in their defense. We're seeing all of this destroyed in America. When you go back and look at the Bundy trials, we had the people who were trying to defend themselves against government accusations, which fortunately a whistleblower there exposed that the entire thing was a lie and a setup by the BLM, by the FBI, by the Department of Justice, the same crooked officials that seem to have their crooked agencies that seem to have their fingerprints on everything. And yet, those people who were facing life sentences because of these false accusations by the BLM and the Department of Justice and the FBI were told by the judge that they couldn't call certain witnesses in their defense. And that right there should have been enough to shut that whole process down. The only thing that saved them, really, was the whistleblower, because the judge was perfectly willing and complicit to allow these types of abuses by the Department of Justice. She was not an honest referee in that trial. She was not going to give them Sixth Amendment protection. And we've seen the same thing happen in the trial of Ross Ulbricht, the Silk Road thing. It had crooked agents inside operating the website. They were not allowed to tell the jury about that. They were not allowed to call certain witnesses. They had information about the corruption within the FBI, within the investigating unit, held from people. And he didn't have a whistleblower. And he is now facing multiple life sentences, which would have been the same outcome of the people who are being run through this kangaroo court process of the federal government in the Bundy trial, if that were allowed to continue on. And it's a very concerning thing when we look at what's happening with this. Ron Paul wrote an op-ed piece. And it's picked up by Zero Hedge. It says, President Trump's recent cabinet shakeup looks to be a real boost to hardline militarism and neoconservatism. If his nominees to head the State Department and the CIA are confirmed, we may well move closer to war, or will have moved closer to war. He says, Pompeo, the nominee, the guy that's coming from the CIA going to the State Department, remains dedicated to a regime change policy that leads to war, not to diplomacy or peace. He blames Iran rather than the 2003 U.S. invasion for the ongoing disaster in Iraq. And he enthusiastically embraced the Bush policy of enhanced interrogation, which the rest of us call torture. And that brings me back to that lawyer I was talking about with a church committee hearing. This guy, he wrote a book about all this stuff. He defended and actually, I think, created the euphemism for torture called enhanced interrogation. Just like killing people without due process or having a kill list, that's matrix disposition and so forth. He called it enhanced interrogation. He's very proud of that. He wrote a book, called it Company Man, because, you know, the nickname of the CIA is The Company. And so he wrote a book about that. He said he saw the CIA scrambling under the pressure from the church committee and the Pike committee hearings because of the illegal, immoral activities that they were engaged in. He said, they need a good lawyer. The rest of us looked at it and said, they need to go to prison. But he thought they needed a good lawyer. So he went to work for them. And as a good lawyer, he invented the term enhanced interrogation. This is the moral depravity of the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy that has the audacity, like John Brennan, to threaten President Trump, to project upon President Trump the very things that he is guilty of. Talking about moral turpitude. Well, I tell you, that doesn't even begin to talk about the moral depravity of John Brennan and the CIA. It doesn't even come close. Moral turpitude. But that is a charge that he threw out along with other charges that basically apply to John Brennan. But who is going to put him in jail? These people believe, and they truly are, they believe they're above the law. And they are above the law. They believe that as career bureaucrats, they should have their jobs protected like a federal job, a federal judge, that it is a lifetime appointment. That is a problem. I don't even agree with a lifetime appointment for federal judges. I certainly don't agree with it for bureaucrats. And when they commit crimes, they ought to go to jail. But that's not the way they see it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Got One more clip I want to play for you, and that is from Rand Paul. But before we do, I want to, and he's talking about the nominations that I was just finishing up on. This is a very important point for us, folks. As I said in the interview with John Kiriakou, making America great again means to go back and to establish our moral foundation. Because if all we're going to become is an economic powerhouse, the Nazis were an economic powerhouse. If we don't want to become the pariah of the world, and rightfully so, with these types of policies that are now being embraced, preemptive war, declaring that we have the right and the ability to invade any country that we wish because we want to change the government, because we want to control the government, because we've got some kind of neo-colonialism here, or the neocons. If we're going to do that, if we're then going to say that we're going to torture people, and we don't really care about the moral implications of this, it may be effective. It may be effective. People who have been there and have used it say, no, it isn't. John Kiriakou says it isn't. John McCain says it isn't. People who have actually conducted it, as a matter of fact, as I point out during the interview with John Kiriakou, you had Pentagon officials who said that after they realized that some of the intelligence, quote unquote, that they had gotten about Iraq that led to the disastrous Iraq war that President Trump just recently said was the worst decision ever in history, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing him here. I don't remember the exact quote. But he said the worst decision in history of the Iraq war. He has consistently criticized that. And yet, the Iraq war was based in part on intelligence that was gathered under torture. And when these Pentagon officials realized that after the fact, they were furious because they said it was tainted by torture. In other words, it's not actually authentic. They will tell you what you want to hear. But I don't even want to have this discussion about whether or not it is effective. As John Kiriakou said, yeah, there's a lot of things that we could do. We could pull people's kids out in front of them and say, you tell us what's going to happen or we're going to shoot your kid in the head. That's effective. Do we want to become like that? So the Nazis had no moral restrictions on anything that they did. They would experiment on people. They would murder people. They would do whatever they wanted to if it was effective, if it made the trains run on time, if they won the battle. That is not what this country should be about. And it is not what this country will be about if we ever make America great again. The rest of the world will judge us. God will judge us if we adopt those types of moral relativism, if we throw morality out the window. We will not be a great country. We will be despised in history. We will go down like the Nazis did because we have no moral authority for any of the things that we do. That is disgusting. That is the way. That is not the way to win. That is the way to lose. You cannot take on the entire world and win. Not even your own people will support you. Remember that the Roman Empire fell from within because the people were so disgusted with their own government, they wouldn't defend it from the barbarian hordes coming across the borders. It collapsed from within because people no longer believed in it. You better give us something that we believe in. You better discover the moral roots of America, or you're not going to have America worth making or defending. Nobody is going to care about this country. Everybody will hate this country if we proceed down this route. It used to be, and this is the basis of our country, the Christian principles, whether you're a Christian or not, whether the founders were Christian or not, it doesn't come down to a debate as to whether they were deists or whether they were Masons or whether they were real Christians or what. It doesn't come down to any of that. We could never know what the beliefs of these people were for sure. They could profess to be Christians. Were they Christians? We don't know for sure. But the country was based upon Christian principles like a just war. These are principles that were longstanding part of Christian countries. The idea that you do not initiate a war. You don't invade Poland. You don't invade Iraq preemptively. You don't have preemptive strikes against people. You only have war when you are attacked. You only have war to defend innocent life. You stop that attack once you have taken the upper hand. You stop unnecessary bloodshed. You limit the war to the combatants and so forth. This is why we have the rules that we do when people break into homes and start stealing your television set. If they're threatening your life, you can defend yourself. If they're grabbing your television set and running off with it under their arm, you can't shoot them in the back because your life is not under threat. There's a sense of proportionality. There's a sense that it's only justified in defense of innocent life. That's why there was to be a debate about whether or not we would get into war, a debate by our elected representatives. And then once the war started, yes, you have an executive who has to make quick decisions. But it should not be taken lightly. And there are moral considerations to a just war. We need to stop these unjust, undeclared wars, not add to them, which we are doing now. Look at Yemen. Look at all these other places. Is it okay because Saudi Arabia is our ally, because they're going to be a chess piece in our 4D chess game? Makes me disgusted to see these types of calculations. This is the kind of immorality that was brought to us by people of the ilk of Henry Kissinger and his realpolitik, saying we have no permanent allies, we only have permanent interests. Well, you have no moral restrictions on what your interests are either, do you, Henry Kissinger? Or these other people in the deep state? All right, I haven't done a plug this hour. I want to do this, and then we're going to get into an update. Have some news, and we're going to update what's going on with the Russian investigation, with the bomb investigation. We've got a new attack at a Maryland high school. There's no confirmation yet as to anything that has happened there. They say the event is contained. There's no report of casualties, so we're not sure if this was a shooting or if anybody was indeed even hit with gunfire. You know, when they talk about all the school shootings and their statistics, they include every time a firearm is discharged at or near a school, whether or not anybody was hit with it. And just like when they look at people who have been killed by firearms, they don't distinguish between people who killed somebody who was attacking them, who defended life, versus somebody who was the aggressor. There is no distinction made there between deaths as a result of defense and those that are a result of criminal aggression. But before we go to break, I just want to remind you that we are supported by the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. That keeps us independent of Google and of Twitter and of Facebook and of all the advertising boycotts that CNN tries to organize against us. It's you going to InfoWarsStore.com, finding products there that are going to support your health and are going to support this operation, and we sell some really fine products. I use most of the products that we sell there on a regular basis. Let me tell you about a couple of them right now. Alexa Pure Breeze, a great air purification system. It's now $50 off at InfoWarsStore.com. We have our new reformulated Myco ZX, 50% off, a great way to protect your body from dangerous toxins, and a new product that has nano silver in it. We have Super Blue Silver Immune Gargle that joins our nano silver toothpaste as well as our nano silver mouthwash. Great way to control bacteria that causes gum disease, tooth loss, and heart disease. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to play for you real quickly a clip of Rand Paul, because it is very important that we have moral people leading our government. And that's not what we're looking at in Gina Haspel and Mike Pompeo. And here's what Rand Paul has to say about that.
Well, you know, the president, one of the things I liked about President Trump and still do like is that he continues to say the Iraq war was a mistake. But when you say it's a mistake, basically what you're saying is that regime change in the Middle East leads often to unintended consequences. Well, he keeps appointing people around him who love the Iraq war so much that they're ready for a war with Iran next. And so I don't think you really want people who are eager for war to be running the State Department. You want a diplomat. I frankly think that Pompeo's positions are too much of an advocate for regime change really everywhere, North Korea, Iran, Russia, you name it. And I think really we need to see the world as it is. Doesn't mean we need to support what happens everywhere in the world, but I don't think our policy ought to be for regime change. And so I think Pompeo really isn't a good fit to be a diplomat or to be the chief diplomat. With regard to Haspel, I think that, you know, what America stands for is not torture. You know, torture is the hallmark of totalitarianism. We should be that hope for the rest of the world, that people who, you know, who want to resist totalitarianism, that, you know, they want to be free from torture. They don't want to be free to torture. And so I really think that it's inappropriate to put someone at the head of the CIA. They have so much power. Power to assassinate, power to spy, power to collect all the data on everyone in the world. I don't think the person running that agency should be someone who ran a secret prison in Thailand.
That's right. I would disagree with Rand Paul on just one point. When he said we should be the moral guidelight to the world, or however he phrased it, he said should be. Let me tell you something. We must be. We must demand nothing less than that from our government. Our Bill of Rights demands it. The Constitution that they swear an oath to demands it. And the American people must demand morality and a system of moral law and of obedience to the higher authority of the Constitution. At the very minimum, we should demand that from our civil servants. And they don't see themselves as our servants anymore. They don't see themselves as servants to the Constitution. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. It is the king of this country. They are unfaithful stewards who have wrested control from the rightful king, from the rightful authority. And they have no moral authority. If we cannot say that, well, it would be nice if we were a moral country. We should be a moral country. No, we must be a moral country. If we're not a moral country, it is Americans who will feel it first. Not only will we be the pariahs of the world, and rightfully so, but this immoral government will turn upon us first. That was always the concerns of the founders. That was one of the major reasons that they didn't want us to become an empire, that they didn't want us to go abroad seeking monsters to destroy, because that turns your own government into a monster. You know, the terms of the tools that they use to fight the monsters abroad turn into tools of tyranny at home. And we have already experienced this. And it's time that we have a renaissance in America. And that renaissance is going to begin with a moral understanding and a demanding by the American people that we're not going to put up with this anymore. We are not going to support criminals and people who promote criminals to high positions. We cannot embrace that. In the name of saying that it doesn't work. It does not work. It is the path to destruction for this society, and rightfully so. Any society that embraces torture, that embraces wars without cause, deserves to die. And that refers to you, America. That's God's judgment on you if you continue to go down this path. All right. The latest shooting that we've had reported in Maryland, at least three people were injured, they say. No reports yet of anybody, how serious the injuries are. They say that the event is contained in Maryland. I can't say that about the bomber that is still at large here in Texas. No idea as to who this is or the motivations. We have seen President Trump attacked in the past, say he would be doing something about this if this was white people. Well, it is white people now. We've had a count. It's now the victim count is three blacks, two whites, one Hispanic, and one person that was injured today. We don't know what color that person is. Does it matter? Does it matter if the victim today in the Federal Express plant, this is going to be a mail bomb? We keep seeing these tactics changing now. I don't know if this is the same person or if this is a copycat killer. The first three events were package bombs left on people's doorsteps. The event that took place Sunday, that was a bomb that was left with a tripwire. Now, this is a bomb that was being sent through the mail. So, is this the same guy? It's starting to change very rapidly, the MO. But the question is, this person that was injured today, let's see, it was, again, I don't see any any name yet released or sex or skin color. Why does that make a difference except to people who see nothing but skin color and sex? The Democrats, in other words, the mainstream media, they're gonna care about that. Isn't it enough that we get this person instead of trying to politicize it on the basis of skin color? And, of course, two people have died. Both of them were black. They were just the first victims in this bombing campaign as people, I guess, maybe, this particular bomb was also had nails in it, like the bomb that went off on Sunday. But again, this was a package that was being run through the mail, being mailed to Austin, and was being sorted through the Federal Express Distribution Center just outside San Antonio, a small town outside of San Antonio. As I said before, this is a very complicated thing. We've got over 500 people, various law enforcement agencies, local police. We've got the FBI, the ATF, all looking into this, kind of like the situation in the U.K., except that Theresa May and Nikki Haley identified the culprit. It was Vladimir Putin. And I think we should really question their motivations in this, as well as the accuracy of their charges. Or if they're such wonderful Sherlock Holmeses, then we should have the two of them come to Austin and solve this for us, because they obviously are like clairvoyant or something. I don't know, calling Karnak the Great to look through this. But we had the Metropolitan Police, who were looking at this Skripal investigation, say this is very challenging, it's very complex, it's going to take us months, but not Nikki Haley and Theresa May. They understood what this was all about immediately. They solved it just like, as a matter of fact, they have already meted out the punishment. So they jumped right to this. But the police who were there said, like this bombing that is going on, this bombing campaign here in Texas, they said this is extremely challenging, complex investigation. We currently have around 250 exceptionally experienced and dedicated specialist officers from the counterterrorism network working around the clock on this case. Well, they can save themselves the trouble, because Theresa May has already identified who it was and has punished them. He said they're being supported by hundreds of more officers from across the police family, as well as military and other emergency services. He went on to state that the detectives were examining about 4,000 hours of closed-circuit TV footage. They're making good progress, he said, in what is a painstaking investigation that is likely to be ongoing for weeks, if not months. And so the question also with this is that nobody died. Nobody died. We have a conspiracy theory here from Theresa May and Nikki Haley, and nobody died. You're not allowed to say that nobody died, except in this case, nobody did die. Isn't that interesting? Not saying that there wasn't an event. I'm saying that this was nerve gas, which we're told this particular nerve gas, Novichok, is supposedly 8 times more potent than VX nerve gas, yet they didn't die from this. That is very interesting, I think. And that is something that we should take a look at. But we have more amazing things about this investigation that I think you'll find fascinating when we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. You may be right, I may be crazy, and I'm going to have a lot of people call me crazy, going to call me a Russian, because I'm not going to be railroaded into supporting a war based on an event where nobody died and we don't know what's happened. I just told you before we went to break that we had the Metropolitan Police in the UK say, we've got an army of people here, we got 250 people that are specialists, and we got, besides that, we got more law enforcement, military, and so forth. Taking a look at this, and it's going to take us months to sort through all this, but not for Theresa May, not for Nikki Haley, not for people who have an agenda and are using it in the same way that we have seen CNN and David Hogg and all these other people with an agenda, George Clooney, the Hollywood crowd, with an agenda, using an event to push their agenda of gun control. Well, these people have an agenda of war, and they have no qualms about pushing it, regardless of what actually happened there. And as I said at the beginning, nobody died. And this was one of the things that Vladimir Putin pointed out. I said it was odd that this is such a potent nerve gas agent that nobody died. I've pointed out before, I said, you know, even Kim Jong-un was able to kill his brother or half-brother, whatever it was, with a nerve gas thing. But nobody died here with this potent nerve gas? Vladimir Putin said, dismissed this theory when he was asked about it. He said, it's a military-grade toxic agent, we're being told. It's in the poisoning. But, of course, Russia was supposed to respond to this, but they were not even allowed to see, get a sample of what this was, to analyze it for themselves. So we want you to defend yourself and prove that you're innocent. We're not even going to give you a sample of the alleged toxin, but you prove that you're innocent, or we're going to take action. And we're going to do it by midnight. You get this to me by midnight. The melodramatics of Theresa May. What a shameful trio of women we've got with her, with Nikki Haley, and even with Liz Cheney out there pushing Gina Haspel. I mean, this, as I said last week, it's a toxic femininity. These women in power, it's almost like the Napoleon complex of somebody who is a short guy, and he gets real authoritarian with people, really eager to exert his authority over people. And it seems like these women who get in high political office, it seems to bring out the worst aspects of them. Now I will be respected. Now I will be the ruler of the world. Mwahaha. I mean, that's what it seems to be with these toxic feminists who get in the position of leadership. There's a kind of spin on the Napoleon complex here. But Putin also said, it is an obvious fact that people would, of course, have died on the spot. It's an obvious fact. You should simply understand that. That was basically his defense. But what of these conspiracy theories that are being pushed to us by our various governments? We have a story here from Zero Hedge. A Russian double agent reportedly poisoned through BMW air vents as 38 others are sickened. Think about this for a second. Think about the logic behind what they're saying here. Former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal may have been poisoned through his BMW E90s 320D's ventilation system. Well, you list out the full serial number and the VIN number of the BMW. That makes it real, right? Think about this. This is being sold to us by ABC News, another conspiracy theory to feed the Cold War. ABC News notes that 38 other individuals are also affected by the nerve agent. Perhaps, some have suggested, Skripal and his daughter pulled over to exit the car, left the doors open, and people walking by received a non-lethal dose. If they were getting a dose in a closed-up car, and it was concentrated enough that 38 people would get sick by walking past that car with an open door, don't you think it would have killed him and his daughter? I use a little bit of common sense with this, but certainly you can see where these people are going. But it gets even worse. And I had this on my desk last Friday, but I couldn't get to it in time. Moonofalabama.org makes some interesting points. They say there's a lot of discrepancies in this, and one of the things that is very interesting is the fact that we had a doctor and others who first administered first aid were not affected at all. You know, we're told that one of the first responders, and it's not really clear where this first responder became ill. Was it where did he come in contact with the alleged poison? Was it at Skripal's house, or was it at the bench where he collapsed? It's not clear. There's different, there are incomplete information about that. Meanwhile, a doctor who was one of the first people at the scene has described how she found Ms. Skripal slumped unconscious on a bench, vomiting and fitting. She has also lost control of her bodily functions at the time the woman came up. She asked not to be named, but she told the BBC that she moved Ms. Skripal into the recovery position and opened her airway as others tended to her father. She said she treated her for almost 30 minutes, and there was no sign of any chemical agent on her, on Ms. Skripal's face or body. The doctor said she'd been worried she would be affected by the nerve agent, but added, so far I feel fine. Oh, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? It'll be absorbed through the skin. After all this happened, the UK government made a big show, and I understand you want to exercise caution. But they made a big show of all the people in hazmat costumes. You see these guys dressed up in green, and they've got the red ball back there, and they're kind of hunched over because of the things that are breathing apparatus or something's on their back. They look like some kind of bad Halloween costume for an alien monster. And yet you see them, pull up this story if you can, you see them standing there, all the people head to toe, not that particular picture, there's another one, but you see them head to toe, covered up, hunched around a taped-off crime scene area with tarp on the ground and two guys standing. That's the one right there. Zoom in on that. Two guys standing there. It's circled right there. You can see they have don't even have a mask on their face. But see, it's even more important that we had a doctor who showed up, one of the first people on the scene at the bench. The woman was Ms. Kripal, the daughter, was unconscious, slumped unconscious on the bench, having vomiting and fitting and so forth. And this lady started tending to her and worked with her for 30 minutes. She had no protective clothing on. She said, yeah, I feel fine. No problem. I don't know what the deal is. Very, very interesting when we look at this. I don't have an answer as to what this is. But what concerns me is that Theresa May and Nikki Haley don't have an answer either. And they're using this as a pretense to increase the Cold War. Even with Nikki Haley going through a long litany of gas attacks, talking about Syria. It's like, how dare you use, there's another picture of them. And there's the two guys dressed as aliens standing there. Those are unusual looking costumes, to say the least. But I'm sure that they're effective to protect people, but obviously they're there with other people who don't feel like they need to be protected. But it still goes back, regardless of what is happening in that picture, it still goes back to the testimony of that doctor that was reported by the BBC. And when we look at this and we look at the narrative of Nikki Haley pushing for war, saying this is Russia's crime. Now, the crime of America, the crime of Nikki Haley, is to say that these false flag Syrian gas attacks, which if you remember, we were told they were sarin. And subsequently it was proven that they were not sarin. And they tried this now twice on us, a couple of years apart, almost the same time of year they did it. And the very first one that they did, I think it was back in 2013. And organized the response to it was, we're not going to be Al-Qaeda's Air Force. Because we were there. Supporting Al-Qaeda. We had John McCain funding that. And the CIA funding that. And they wanted us to get our Air Force involved there. They want American ground troops in Syria. And they will do anything to get that. And at the time, people said, well, wait a minute. They were telling us that it was sarin gas. It could only be produced by a state entity. Therefore, it was Syria that did it. And the UN goes there and they say, well, no, this doesn't look like sarin gas. And then the Russian chemical team goes there and says, it doesn't look like sarin. And eventually the American team went there and said, no, it's not sarin gas. It's not Syria. It's not state produced. And we shut that down. Then they tried it again 2 years later. And now Nikki Haley is using those as evidence against Putin. Obvious lies and attempts at a false flag used again by Nikki Haley to push for war. This is absolutely insane. They said again, moon over Alabama. They say the UK government has made an immense show by involving the army, sending out lots of people and obviously unnecessary high protection gear. It has also planted a lot of rumors on March the 9th. It was said that the poison likely came from inside Mr. Skripal's house. 3 days ago, claims were made that it was smeared on the door handle of his car. I just told you, maybe it was coming through the vents of the car. And then when he opened the door, 38 other people got sick. Well, why didn't he die then if it was that intense? Today it is supposed to have come out of a suitcase of Mr. Skripal's daughter. All of these claims are based on leaks from anonymous officials selling conspiracy theories. It's likely none of them are true. And then finally this. We have the Porton Down scientists who have a chemical warfare center that is just 7.2 miles down the road. And they are being pressured and complaining about the pressure that they are under from the UK government. And they finally said, well, it may be based on a formulation by the Russians, but we can't say it was the Russians.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We had Michael Moore even say that he was sick and tired of hearing Russia, Russia, Russia. Not that it's not important. He said, oh, no, we have to pull Trump down. But I'm really kind of getting tired of it. And we couldn't get any coverage for our teachers' strike here at the place that he was reporting from, because all they want to talk about is Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, that's one thing. But these lying sellers of war, that's what a warmonger is. It's somebody who sells war to you. That's their trade, their stock and trade. As Frank Zappa said, the politicians are merely the entertainment branch of the military-industrial complex. And these politicians who've been tickling your ear with their absurd conspiracy theories are selling you war. They're going to send your sons and daughters, or maybe they'll send you. They're going to send your sons and daughters to war. And they're going to die for the lies of these politicians. That's what makes me angry about this. And it ought to make you angry about it as well. Just like they sent your sons and daughters to die in Iraq and elsewhere. They sell the lies, and you supply the bodies for their wars. And so when we look at this, and we look at what is happening here, we've got something that sounds suspiciously like the 17 intelligence agencies said the Russians hacked the election. We have one individual here, former British ambassador Craig Murray, says the British Chemical Weapon Laboratory at Porton Down, just 7 miles down the road from where this incident happened in Salisbury in the UK, says that they're not sure at that chemical weapons facility, Porton Down, exactly what this is. He says, this is former British ambassador Craig Murray, said, I have now received confirmation from a well-placed FCO source that Porton Down scientists are not able to identify the nerve gas as being of Russian manufacture and have been resentful of the pressure being placed upon them to do so. Porton Down would only sign up to the formulation, quote, of a type developed by Russia, unquote. And that was after a rather difficult meeting where this was agreed upon as a compromise statement. So they're putting pressure on them. Say that the Russians did it. Say the Russians made this. Well, you know, I don't want to. I can't tell that this was done. Well, say that because this was Novichok, that it was of a type of Russian formulation. Well, all right. Go away. Leave me alone. This sounds a lot like the 17 intelligence agencies, which was a lie that began with Hillary Clinton in a debate and was parroted by James Clapper, the liar himself, who just passed his 5-year anniversary of escaping without any jail sentence or even any charges for perjury when he lied to the American people under oath that they were not unconstitutionally spying upon the American people. But then this information here from Zero Hedge pointing out that Israel has extensive stocks of chemical weapons, but's always refused to declare any of them to the OPCW. That's the organization globally that goes around and inspects chemical warfare. The same organization that went around and from 2005 to 2015 said that they gave Russia a clean bill of health. They said they have destroyed their stocks of chemical weapons like this, and they have no manufacturing facilities. And we had the British ambassador at the time say, great, congratulations on this successful work of getting this out. Everybody was concerned about it because it was in the wild in the early 90s after the Soviet Union fell in 1989. You had Uzbekistan, major facility there, as I've reported before. It was basically chaos, an arms bazaar. Everything was up for grabs, nuclear, biological, chemical, all the concern that everybody had about suitcase nukes came out of that time. But as they point out in the Zero Hedge article, they say Israel has extensive stocks of this. Israel is not a state party to the Chemical Weapons Convention, nor a member of the OPCW. Israel signed up in 1993, but they refused to ratify it, which means that inspectors' instruction of its chemical weapons, Israel is undoubtedly as much a technical capacity as anybody. So why aren't they a suspect if we're going to go on this basis? So until this week, the near universal belief that among chemical weapon experts, the official position of the OPCW was that Novichoks were at most a theoretical research program, which the Russians never succeeded in actually synthesizing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we have Lee Stranahan joining us in the next hour.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to finish up with what is going on with the push to war. Not only a push to a greater, deeper Cold War, but also a push to a fighting war that is being undertaken now by the neocons in this country and in the UK as well. And across Europe, we have everybody signing on to this absurd conclusion without an investigation. Very dangerous thing to do. As I was talking about in the last couple of segments, there was a lot of pressure put on the scientists at the chemical weapons facility just down the road, 7 miles down the road, there in Salisbury, England. And they resented the pressure, reports former British ambassador Craig Murray, after a lot of pressure. And they refused to say that the nerve gas was manufactured by the Russians. They agreed as a compromise statement to say that it was a formulation, a type of formulation developed by Russians. So what does this mean? As I point out, the Zero Hedge points out that we have other state actors who manufacture this and don't even participate in the Chemical Weapons Convention, like Israel, for example. They're known to have manufactured this, and they refuse any inspections. And yet it has to be the Russians, because the Russians fit their agenda. And when we look at the Novichoks, as Zero Hedge reports until this week, the near-universal belief among chemical weapons experts and the official position of the OPCW, the organization that is set there to take down chemical weapons, was that Novichoks were at most a theoretical research program, which the Russians had never succeeded in actually synthesizing and manufacturing. That is why they are not on the OPCW list of banned chemical weapons. Porton Down, they say, is still not certain that it is the Russians who have apparently synthesized this Novichok. Hence, they said, of a type developed by Russia. Note, developed, not made, produced, or manufactured. And as they conclude, it is a very carefully worded statement of propaganda developed by liars. And if you buy their lie, you will die. They will send you to war. That's what these people ultimately want. They'll have war for any reason. War for regime change, it doesn't bother them at all. That you have massive numbers of civilians and children dying in Syria, dying in Yemen, dying anywhere. They don't care. As Madeleine Albright said when she was asked by Leslie Stahl, you had sanctions, just sanctions, sanctions that have been said to have starved 500,000 children. Do you have any regrets about that? And Madeleine Albright, who was Secretary of State, while that happened, didn't come back and say, no, there's not that many children who died. I dispute that figure. No, she said, yeah, it was worth it. It was worth it. We don't care. You don't mean anything to these people. Henry Kissinger said military men are just nothing but animals to be used by these people. Don't let them use you like that. Don't let them push this. This is a very dangerous thing that's being pushed by Nikki Haley and Theresa May. They're taking the lead on this, and they should be regarded as bloodthirsty war criminals. That's the way I see them. All right, let's talk about some other lies that are coming out here. We got the Obama campaign. We've had a lot of people. It's absolutely amazing to me that people are so upset about this Facebook thing, as if they had never seen the Ed Snowden leaks. Do you realize that your own government is mining that data and looking at everything in your life? I pointed out that metadata is the most important thing for them, because unlike your phone conversations and your texts, where they may have to go through those more or less by hand, with metadata, they can process you algorithmically. And I've said that while they may be interested in mostly in interesting people, they're not interested in bad people, as Michael Hayden has said. No, they don't. They're not there to protect you. They're there to look at interesting people and people that they can make money off of, or people that they can shut down who are their political opponents. And then they're interested in the hive mind. And that's what's been coming out about this Cambridge Analytica stuff. Is that really that big a deal? I mean, certainly you do know that Facebook is there to mine every bit of data about you, that they will collect data on you when you're not even on Facebook, that they will collect data on you even if you don't have a Facebook account. If you open one up and you shut it down, they're still getting information on you. And it's not a new thing that it was done by the Republicans. As a matter of fact, the Republicans didn't do as good a job of it as Obama did. Ted Cruz dropped Cambridge Analytica. He said they didn't help him any. But that's not what Obama said, and that's not what the Obama former staffer who was director for media analytics, Carol Davidson, had this to say. Let's play that clip.
It's a simple question. Who owns the fact that you and I are friends?
right?
Giving a presentation.
I see someone on the street and I meet them and I can be like, oh, my friend Kate, yeah, we're great friends, right? I apparently own that information because Kate wasn't there and I told someone that that was true, right? So Facebook, 2012 election, had the ability for people to opt in. The Obama campaign, like, rocked this, right? We got people to opt in, and the privacy policies at that time on Facebook were that if they opted in, they could tell us who all their friends were. Okay, so they told us who all their friends were. This is very much how local campaigns work, right? People sit in a room, it's a really small thing, all of their biggest supporters sit around the table and they like circle the names of the people that they know and that they're gonna outreach to, and they figure out how to fill in the gaps of the people that they don't know.
All right, let's hold it right there, because what she's saying is, who owns this information? That fundamental question has been the basis for our government to ignore the Fourth Amendment. They ignored it with the wiretaps. They said, oh, we got PIN numbers with telephones, with wired telephones. So we can, that's not data that you own. That's data that is owned by the phone company. Now, fast forward 50 years. And they say, well, all that information that's being collected by Facebook, that's owned by Facebook. And they can turn it over to us. That's why they were so desperate to pass CISPA. They tried, actually, they got it as CISA. They took out the protection because they didn't want you to think about who was being protected with that. They had SOPA, they had ACTA, they had PIPA, they had CISPA. These were all efforts in the United States and in Europe to remove any criminal liability from these private spies, these social media companies that the government was going to enlist to spy upon you. They didn't want you to be able to sue them for being snitches. And that was what this was about. That's why they were so desperate about this. That's why they kept coming back again and again and again. Aaron Schwartz opposed it. I believe they killed Aaron Schwartz for that. His family believes that they killed him. They think that they drove him to suicide. I think it was probably a more direct action. He didn't seem like the kind of guy who was going to give up. He had a lot to live for, and he was a fighter, and he fought them successfully on this. After he died, they finally got it through. But this has been a pattern of behavior to say that you do not own the information. And let me tell you where this leads. Right back in my old hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina, like I said last hour, it's no longer the area that embodies the values of Sheriff Andy Taylor. No, this is a Barney Fife drunk with power and saying there is no controlling legal authority here because I can get this information from anybody. They're going around. Police in Raleigh, North Carolina have presented Google with warrants. Let's put quotes around that, warrants. They provide them with warrants to obtain data from mobile phones, not just specific subjects who were in a crime scene area, but from mobile phones of all people who were in the area. So it's like, give us all the data that you got on everybody who was there at a particular time. Okay, and not just people that are specific. See, a warrant is either general, in which case our founders fought a war to stop that type of abuse, or it is specific as to the person, place, and time that you want to go search for something that has to do with a particular crime, and you go before a judge to get that. That's a Fourth Amendment warrant, but they don't use those kind of warrants anymore. They have general warrants. And they are using the idea that they can do this to anybody at any time because Google owns this data. See, that's the fundamental conceit that they use to gaslight people. And this organization that reports this, Fast Company, says the request will trouble Fourth Amendment advocates. Are you a Fourth Amendment advocate? Do you support the idea of individual liberty and personal rights as encoded in the Constitution? Why isn't everybody a Fourth Amendment advocate? Why are they not troubled by this? And they said the area the police are requesting on is not small. In one instance, the police requested user data from Google for anyone within a 17-acre area. Not a specific warrant. Very dangerous precedent. A very dangerous false idea. Stay with us when we come back. Lee Stranahan will be joining us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Lee Stranahan. Before we do, so we don't get interrupted with the interview, I just want to remind you of some of the products at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what keeps us independent. They've tried to censor us on YouTube. As a matter of fact, we've now got Google bragging about the fact that they are going to censor some news and other news are going to start paying. Carrot and stick. They're going to control what you see and hear. Well, there's a way around that. You can have independent media. That's what InfoWars represents. That's what Lee Stranahan represents with his site as well. But the way that you can support us is with the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, and you can support your health. And let me give you an idea of some of the specials that we have right now. We have Alexa Pure Breeze, a great air purification system. This is something that everybody ought to be aware of in their home. It's a, if you've got a home that you're keeping tightly closed because you're trying to keep it cool or warm, you're going to have a collection of toxins in that home. You need something to purify that air, and this is a way that does it. This device does it very silently, even on high speed, and it is very effective. Alexa Pure Breeze is now $50 off at InfoWarsStore.com. I have one in my home. It is very effective. It's one of our favorite products that we have. Of course, we use a lot of products from InfoWars, and we're very happy with those. Also, we have a new product, Super Blue Silver Immune Gargle. And that has nano silver in it, just like our Super Blue toothpaste and mouthwash. It is now at an introductory price of 33% off. Great time for you to try. You can even use it for your hands, not just oral use, but you can use it to kill bacteria. Nano silver is a very natural, harmless way to get rid of harmful bacteria. It's a great way to get rid of it in your mouth, killing the bacteria that can create gum disease, lead to tooth loss and to heart disease. And finally, we have Myco ZX Plus, now 50% off. It's a new formulation of our older product, Myco ZX. Myco ZX Plus also fights dangerous toxins and the types of things that you find in heavy food and drinks. It's a great natural ingredients that help you to purify your body of the toxins that you find in the environment. So, take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's one thing that helps us to stay in business and to fight this lawsuit, which Lee Stranahan is on with us about. And he's been doing some research. And by the way, you can find Lee at ThePopulist.tv and also at CitizenJournalismSchool.com. Lee, tell me about the research you contacted me with and some things that you just found out, some connections, and some research has been done by Big League Politics. Go ahead.
Well, David, as you know, look, this lawsuit was filed against Alex Jones, InfoWars, Gateway Pundit, Alan West, me, a few other people last week. And I don't know, you know Alex Jones, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I met him once or twice.
are Alex Jones or I or Gateway Pundit known for shutting our mouths?
No, that's right.
So what I've been saying is these guys picked the wrong guys to sue. Brennan Gilmore, who's suing us, and the Georgetown Law Center. Remember that. We're being sued by the Georgetown Law Center, okay? That's going to be important in just a moment here. We got sued for this, and I will tell you, the way Alex heard about it, the way I heard about it, the way Jim at Gateway Pundit heard about it, the way Alan West heard about it, is a reporter from Reuters called us. Now, normally—
Yeah, you weren't served by the lawyer. You were served by a reporter.
By the way, I still have not been served in the lawsuit.
Wow.
I have not been given service, and they have my address.
And what is this, like 10 days or so after they gave it to the press?
That's right. I heard about it last Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a curious person as a reporter, and I've been trying to figure out what's been going on with the lawsuit. Because when I first heard the name Brennan Gilmore, I didn't remember who it was. When they said you're being sued by Brennan Gilmore, I'd forgotten who Brennan Gilmore was, and I'm sure a lot of people in this suit were the same way. Now, me, InfoWars, Gateway Pundit, Alan West, we had not been dealing with the Charlottesville story lately, but other people have in the past month, right before this lawsuit. And one of them is Big League Politics. This is a site that's edited by guy I used to work with at Breitbart, Patrick Howley. And Patrick can really do the research sometimes. He did a story last month about a guy named Mahoney, Chris Mahoney. Now, do you know who Chris Mahoney is?
Yeah, I didn't know who Chris Mahoney was. You gave me some information about him, but he's got an amazing resume here where he's got all of his connections laid out right there.
So this guy, Chris Mahoney, I didn't know who he was either. But once I started looking into it, I think I see what's going on behind the lawsuit. So Chris Mahoney's a former rugby star in New Zealand. He's a New Zealander. Mm-hmm. He also worked in Sierra Leone with Brennan Gilmore. Now, Chris Mahoney was with Brennan Gilmore. He was standing next to him in Charlottesville. Remember, Brennan Gilmore is the person who shot that amazing video of the car plowing into the crowd. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chris Mahoney was next to him. Now, Chris Mahoney also did interviews on the news, but he didn't get quite as much press as Brennan Gilmore, who was the front person, because Brennan Gilmore's the person who shot the video. But let's talk about Chris. Now you got to remember, too, in the lawsuit, we're being sued for claiming, which I never claimed. I never claimed, for instance, I'm being sued that I claimed that Brennan Gilmore was with the CIA. I never said that. I said he was with the State Department, and I said he worked with Tom Perriello, who's a big congressman who was funded by George Soros. Soros was the top funder to him. Mm-hmm. Now, but I never said he was with the CIA, and I never said it because I don't have proof that he's with the CIA. I don't have proof of a Soros connection beyond what I've said. Now, I told Alex the other night, I found that two business partners of Brennan Gilmore, I found this out a couple days ago, and I did a segment with Alex on it on Sunday. A couple of his business partners have connections to the CIA, but let's talk about Chris Mahoney, the friend of Brennan Gilmore's who was with them. He, on his own website, says he was an advisor to the Open Societies Initiative, George Soros's firm. Uh-huh. Furthermore, uh-huh. There's a photo of him that Big League Politics reported in February, a photo of Chris Mahoney with Alexander Soros, George Soros's son. Furthermore, the what you're looking at right now is Chris Murphy's resume. There's no doubting this. He was an advisor for USAID.
Oh, CIA.
Yeah. Well, USAID, yeah. USAID has a lot of connections to the CIA. Now, yeah. Am I saying Chris Murphy's with the CIA? No, I don't have sufficient reason to say that. Does that make sense? I want to be clear, since they're suing me, I'm always factual in this.
And I'm curious, we got to take a break here, but I'm curious if any of the other people made that connection or if they voluntarily made that connection in their lawsuit when nobody had made that claim about them. So we're going to be right back with Lee Stranahan. We're going to be talking about this lawsuit from Georgetown University, a shotgun approach to shut down the First Amendment. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. He is part of the shotgun attack on media outlets that has been launched by Georgetown Law School. He is a defendant, as is Alex Jones, InfoWars. We have a Gateway Pundit on there as well, Alan West. And the question is, are we not allowed to read from somebody's public resume? Are we not allowed to say that they have connections to George Soros, members of the Fabian Society, and so forth, when they come out and strongly insinuate that President Trump was to blame for what happened, the fatal car attack that happened in Charlottesville? Trump comes out and says, well, there's blame on both sides. They said, no, it's Trump who is to blame. And we look at this and we say, well, look at these people. I mean, they are not only globalists, but they're tied in at the top level to all these different globalist organizations. But no, that's defamatory. And so we're talking about the chilling effect that that type of lawsuit has. And it really is a shame, I think, Lee, that you've got Georgetown Law School, a previously prestigious university, engaged in this type of attack against the First Amendment. But you were talking about the connections of Christopher Mahoney that he lists on his resume here to the Open Society, the World Bank, various organizations, pictures that were taken of him.
That's right. And notice on that resume, one of the things that you'll find, if it's not there, it's on another one. He's a visiting research fellow at Georgetown Law.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's who's suing us. Now, let me explain what I think is going on here. This is a hypothesis. There is a YouTube channel. There's a guy named Will Evans. He's a lawyer in Virginia, and he's got a YouTube channel called Son of Newo, N-E-W-O. I had never heard of this guy before a week ago, but when I looked at his site, after someone mentioned it to me, they said, this guy's been doing a lot of research on Charlottesville. I had never heard of him. And I'm going to mention that he had never heard of me. He has not followed InfoWars. He's in his own universe. Does that make sense?
Now, right. Doing his own independent thinking and research.
And who has he been talking about in the past month? The aforementioned Christopher Mahoney. He's been in contact with Brennan Gilmore. And we know that he's on Brennan Gilmore's mind because he is not, I'm going to say this, Will Evans, the lawyer from Virginia, son of Newo, is not a defendant in this lawsuit. But
interesting.
He is mentioned multiple times in this lawsuit. And because he's a lawyer, he's actually filed a demand letter saying that this lawsuit was a form of defamation against him. And I think he's right. Now, just picture this, David. You know the media. Picture Brennan Gilmore files suit against Will Evans, a lawyer in Virginia with 10,000 followers, which is respectable, but it's not Alex Jones or Gateway Pundit or me who works for Sputnik and worked for Breitbart. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That's right. Yeah.
If he comes out with that lawsuit, who covers it? Reuters, see it? Nope, they don't cover it.
That's
the
right.
The only reason Reuters, CNN, Newsweek, I can go over it. Watch the Washington Post, Talking Points memo. The reason they covered that, by the way, if he just sued me, it wouldn't have covered. Alex Jones is the media magnet here.
That's so right. Every other day we're getting another lawsuit because people know that regardless of the merits of the lawsuit, it's going to get a lot of media exposure. If they go there, they're going to become celebrities just by suing Alex Jones. It's one of the reasons why, as I reported last week, somebody had said, we need to have a federal anti-slap lawsuit legislation like they do in many states, saying you can't file frivolous lawsuits that are just designed to damage people or to cost them money or to get you publicity. We're not going to let you do that type of lawsuit. That is a law in many states, but at the federal level, we don't have any protection against that. So that's why we've got every other day another lawsuit against Alex Jones to get publicity or to harass us or to try to shut us down.
Well, but understand what they're accomplishing here. Because this is accomplished already. This is, in my opinion, this is not about winning a lawsuit. Because their legal claims are frankly ridiculous. I didn't say anything that was untrue. Nothing. And defamation cases are ridiculously hard to win anyway. But when you're a government official, like a State Department guy, like Brennan Gilmore is, they're almost impossible to win. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything illegal. So let's see what's going on here. And they've already achieved it, David. If you Google Brennan Gilmore, what's going to come up is story after story. See, when CNN covers something, it goes to the top of the Google search rankings. Does that make sense? When the Washington Post covers it, it goes to the top. So now if you Google Charlottesville Soros CIA, let's say, I guarantee you what's going to come up is a bunch of mainstream media stories that say, oh, well, this is a conspiracy theory by right-wing nutjobs, including Alex Jones and Lee Stranahan and Gateway Pundit and Alan West. Mission accomplished. Because now, if you bring up that Chris Mahoney, for instance, there's a picture of him with Alex Soros. He worked directly with Alex Soros. Brennan Gilmore's the top financier for Tom Perriello, who Brennan Gilmore worked with for years, was George Soros. You can find that very, very easily. But the whole point of this is to win, if I may, the information war. See, they're very smart. They've rigged the search results. So any person trying to look into this goes, well, gee, this is a crazy conspiracy theory. And this is why if you look at the lawsuit, they mention this guy, this son of Niwo guy. I will tell you, I've looked at his videos. The reason they're not suing him is they don't want to go in. I'll give you one piece of information he's brought up, completely objective. Did you know that there was helicopter video of the car crashing into it from a police helicopter? And there was security camera video that were shown in court, but they won't release that video to the public. I'm going to say that again. Police helicopter video and security cam video of the accident that were used in court when they did the preliminary hearing against James Fields, who's the person accused of driving the car, right?
Right, into the car.
They introduced that video. They showed it. They showed it to media outlets, but they won't show it. This guy, Will Evans, he's asked for a copy. They won't give it to him. Now, what does that mean? I don't know what it means, but as a citizen, I have questions. As a journalist, I have questions. And that's the kind of stuff that Will Evans is doing. And that's why they name him in the suit, but not as a defendant. Just they try to smear him into it. It's very, very, very clever. And a lot of it relates to this guy, Chris Mahoney. I'm convinced of this because if you go watch Sons of Niwo, he was talking about the story that Brennan Gilmore and Chris Mahoney have told about how they happened to get the footage seems to contradict a timeline that can be established. Don't forget, there was a lot of video cameras running, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So he's been able to establish a timeline that appears to contradict what Gilmore and Mahoney said. Now, what is the implication of that? I don't know. That for whatever, maybe they forgot it, maybe they got it wrong, maybe they're lying. I'm not going to say what the implication of, but it's a valid question to ask why they're saying stuff that does not match with the timeline. And specifically, it has to do with the fact that the car that ran into the people about a minute and a half before that happened, the car drove down to where the protesters were and then backed up. Now, who's saying that? That's been reported. That came up in the preliminary hearing as well, that the car, and there's video evidence of it, right? The car mm-hmm. drove down, then backed up, then drove into them. And neither Brendan Gilmore or Chris Mahoney say they saw them. So there you go.
Oh, that's interesting. And certainly what they had to say, they became the spokespersons for this event for the media. They were the go-to people. And of course, they were professionals at the highest level of global establishments, and they were dumping on President Trump. But don't talk about their background. Can't talk about that. That's defamatory. We'll be right back with Lee Stranahan. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Lee Stranahan. Of course, if you want to help support Lee Stranahan, he has citizenjournalismschool.com, a great way for you to understand the principles of journalism. You know, Lee is very careful about what he has to say. And it's when we look at this lawsuit, again, as he pointed out, this is a broad brush stroke to attack Alex Jones, but to also attack the First Amendment in general and to change the narrative. You know, we have a situation we had Antifa, we had Black Lives Matter there. These are the people who say, by any means necessary, do whatever you need to get this accomplished. And there was a lot of violence that happened before this fatal attack with the automobile. And when President Trump said there was violence on both sides, no, can't talk about that. We can only look at violence on one side. Don't look at the violence by the people who are funded by George Soros, and absolutely do not look at any connections to George Soros, to Antifa, or to Black Lives Matter, or to these individuals who, after the event, became the spokespersons to blame President Trump and to insinuate that he was on their side because he noticed that there was violence being committed by the groups that were funded by George Soros. Lee, your comments about this, as you think they may be just trying to change the narrative on this by ignoring some of the people who are really investigating this over the last several months. I mean, this is something that none of us have talked about since these events happened back in July of last year.
But now, like I say, it's almost like they're poking a hornet's nest by going after Alex and me and Gateway Pundit, because we're people who, as I've said before, we don't shut up, and I pray and I research. I do two things, and I've been doing that. Now, let's talk about Brennan Gilmore a little bit. One of the things that he says in his lawsuit, and he said it in multiple interviews on PBS and other places, is that he was really trepidatious about posting the video because he was afraid of the consequences it might have for him. Let's look at the timeline on that, shall we? He posted that video at 1:13 in the afternoon, okay? Mm-hmm. That is about 20 minutes after the incident.
He did a lot of soul searching there in those 20 minutes. It probably took him that long just to upload it with all the people there, you know, and the data conflicts you got in that area.
Let me add to that. He's also said in multiple interviews that he helped with emergency workers. When the emergency workers came, he helped with them, and that he immediately showed the video to the police. So let's just think about that.
He was busy.
I've got to assume that it took a few minutes for the police to show up, just because it does, right? Maybe it's 2 minutes. Okay, fine, 2 minutes. Then he's got to find the police, show it to them. That's another 3-4 minutes. But what he says in the interviews, David, is that he consulted with friends and family and then decided that it was important to show the truth within 20 minutes. Within 20 minutes. Now, if that's
this guy's maybe secretly the Flash or something, right?
And he became the spokesman for this. But this is not the only thing Brennan Gilmore became the spokesman for. A couple months later, in September, October, right around there, remember the take a knee thing was all over the NFL.
Oh,
remember
that? That's right. That's right. This happened in July, and then in the fall, we had the take a knee protests at the NFL.
That's right. And who should show up in the middle of that controversy but Brennan Gilmore? He tweeted out a photo of his 97-year-old grandfather, old white guy, taking a knee. Furthermore, Brennan Gilmore was then invited. Remember after the Parkland shooting, there was a CNN town hall, right?
Oh, yeah.
So CNN.
Those famous CNN town halls. They're always objective,
exactly
right?
So they had one about the take a knee thing. Anderson Cooper hosted it. Guess who was one of the questioners at that town hall?
Oh, let's see. Was it Gilmore?
It's Brennan Gilmore.
Yeah.
He was in the audience. He was in the audience asking a question, talking about his service. I don't know if he's in the military. I couldn't find any record of that. But he said, you know, his grandfather served and he served, right? And he's saying that, you know, even patriotic white people, That's what his job was. His job was to be a patriotic white person who, like, I'm in favor of the take a knee thing, and I love the country and I love the flag, but I think we should all stand up for free speech or whatever, right? That was his role in that. I'm not saying he was an actor. I'm not saying it's a sincerely held belief. But
we look at these CNN town halls. They have undecided voters who happen to turn out to be Democrat staffers and other things like that. Whatever the topic is, whether it's gun control or it's Obamacare,
that's right,
or it's taking the knee, you know. And this guy is certainly somebody who has a lot of heavy connections inside the Obama administration and with these globalist groups.
And now what he's doing is he's making himself out to be the hero who's finally going to make Alex Jones pay, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be the one who's going to bring Alex Jones to justice. And a lot of people who don't like Alex, not because they've listened to Alex, right? Because this is what I find. A lot of the people who really hate InfoWars have never listened to InfoWars, ever.
They've
never listened to it.
That's right.
Right?
They would never do it because of all the stuff that the late night comedians have said about us, or because of these defamatory lawsuits.
And the issue, the big issue with InfoWars is, I've said it before, I'll say it again. InfoWars has not been afraid to talk about the history of the CIA, to talk about, has the CIA, I mean, Alex is one of the, you know, what other right-wing outlet, right, talks about Operation Northwoods, which was the false flag operation that the CIA was planning. Who talks about that? Nobody.
That's right. That looked exactly like 9/11. And they said, hey, you know, what if we had people crash airliners into buildings and then we could blame it on Castro? And that was declassified.
Or what if the MK, who else talks about the MK Ultra program, where one of the purposes of the MK Ultra program was to see if you could get people to crash planes or cars. This was in the CIA's own documents, right? Mm-hmm. Now, let's be very clear. Am I saying that the CIA had someone crash a car at Charlottesville? No, I'm not, because I don't have sufficient proof to say that. Sure. I don't even really suspect it. What I suspect is going on is something else we know the CIA did, which is a disinformation media campaign. That's right. What I think is going on. If you want my opinion, clearly this is a media campaign that's used to promote a narrative.
And we got a clip right now as you're talking. We got a picture of him at the CNN town hall. There he is asking the question. He's just a concerned citizen. He doesn't have any connections to any globalist organizations or the U.S. government. He's just a concerned citizen picked at random off the street by Anderson Cooper and CNN.
That's right. And the thing that we've done, you guys, the people who are getting sued have done, is they brought up enough stuff about it in a responsible way. Again, I'll say it again. I don't think this guy's CIA. I don't have proof of that. What I think is there's these connections, and suddenly I actually find the lawsuit very suspicious. I find that the lawsuit is part of what makes me more suspicious about this guy and his friend Chris Mahoney, who when you sue somebody, I would understand this. If we'd picked a guy off the street random, like it was a baker or something, and we said, well, that guy's CIA, nothing like that happened. This guy worked for the State Department. He worked for a congressman whose top funder was George Soros, period. That's objectively true. He admits it in the lawsuit. And then this idea that somehow, because some people in the audience will jump to a conclusion that I have not jumped to, that I'm responsible for that, is nuts. It's crazy. And
well, you didn't say anything about the CIA. Like I said before, I'm curious to see if anybody else said anything about the CIA, or is this like a situation where you got a murder investigation and they haven't said what the murder weapon was, whether it was a knife or a rifle or a pistol or whatever. And say a guy, but it is actually like say a pistol, and the guy says, I didn't have a pistol. It's like, where did that come from? Why did you bring that up? I didn't say anything. The detective says, I didn't say anything about a pistol. You didn't say anything about the CIA. Why did they interject that there? Was that something that was said by somebody else?
And why did they bring up the Soros thing? I had brought up the Soros thing. I remember the day of Charlottesville very vividly. I had brought up the Soros thing before the car hit anybody, because what I was seeing in Charlottesville reminded me of what I had seen in the Ukraine in 2014 with the coup of the Ukraine that Soros was behind. So I was making the Soros connection before Brennan Gilmore, anything was going on, before anything was going on.
And, of course, there were State Department connections with Victoria Nuland.
And let me just say one other thing, David. I'm going to really start pushing this issue. Journalists need to look at this lawsuit. Journalists who don't like InfoWars, who don't like Breitbart, who don't like Sputnik, I don't care who they are, they need to step up and go, this is a bogus lawsuit. And this is dangerous to press freedom for everybody.
It absolutely is. But, of course, we don't understand precedents here in this country. Right. Nobody really cares about that. It's like, well, if I can win, I don't really care what the moral issue here or the legal precedent. Lee Stranahan, you can find him at thepopulist.tv. Also, citizenjournalismschool.com. Thank you, Lee. That's our broadcast today. Thank you for joining us.